Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Everyone, welcome to Just Believe Radio on the Right Stream Radio Network. I'm your host, Lisa Tarvis, and I'm happy to have everybody joining us today. I'm actually going to just go in and open the chat room now because I got so busy chatting with our guests that we're having on today that I forgot to actually launch the chat room. So anyone, if you want to come online and chat while we're having the show, you can do that using the URL that is for our show. I'm going to do that now. Okay, hitting the button. All right, done. Okay, so anyway, like I said, my name is Lisa Tarvis, and you're listening to Just Believe Radio. I'm a metaphysician. I'm a board-certified holistic health practitioner. I'm an intuitive counselor and author of the book Just Believe, and radio show host, obviously, of Just Believe and of a show on Friday nights called Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. Which is a women's topic show. It's a really fun show. Tune in on Friday nights at 7 p.m. to watch that or to listen to that one. You can watch if you want, but anyway, it's not really going to get you anywhere. So the Right Stream Network, by the way, I'm also the director of marketing for the Right Stream Network, so I'm constantly trying to get experts in the fields of all the different topics that we cover on the Right Stream Network on the, to let me know if they want to be on one of our shows. We host Just Believe, which is spirituality, holistic health, metaphysics, the paranormal, things like that, which is my show. And then we have on Mondays, Military Monday with John D. Gresham. And John talks about the military and a lot of different topics under that umbrella. Then on Tuesdays we have Right Stream Tuesday with Daria Ann, and Daria covers topics for writers. She interviews authors of all kinds of genres and talks about the publishing and all different aspects of writing. Then Wednesdays we have Family Power Hour, which has two really great people on there. One of them is a clinical psychologist, and the other is a family law attorney. So those are the two hosts, and really it's a really great combination, and they cover some really great topics regarding family dynamics. And then on Fridays we now host Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, which has been our newest show that we launched at the end of November. And that has myself as a host, Daria and DiGiovanni as a host, and then also my daughter, Kristen Fetterman, who is 19, she is a college student and at 19, and she hosts with it with me as well, so that we have a lot of different ages and life kind of different kinds of lifestyles and different experiences and things of that sort to talk about from. So we have different perspectives, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, for different subjects that women are interested in. So anyway, Just Believe airs every Sunday at 7 p.m. And if you want to be on the show, or you know somebody who wants to be on the show, send me an email. You can email me at lisa@lisatarvis.com, LISATARVES.com. Oh, and if you know somebody who's interested in another part of another show that we host on the Right Stream Network, please feel free to email me for that too. If you want to call in and ask our guest today or me any questions, you can do that at 347-945-7246. And again, the chat room is also open. So I want to talk today about our guest. I want to read her bio But this is somebody that I connected with, I don't know, it was several months ago, either through Twitter or LinkedIn or probably both. Who knows? Facebook. Who knows? One of those social networks. And I loved the book that I happened to have been reading at the time, called The Road Back to Me. And we connected and just hit it off immediately. And so I was able to finally get her booked on my show. And I'm really excited about this because this is a really, really awesome book. And she's actually done a couple others as well. And I believe there's a fourth in the works, if I heard her correctly. So anyway, her name is Lisa. Great first name, by the way. Lisa A. Romano. And Lisa is a best-selling author. She's a speaker and a life coach who specializes in emotional recovery work specifically related to the topic of codependency. Her books are The Road Back to Me, The Road Beyond the Codependent Divorce, and Loving the Self Affirmations. Her book, The Road Back to Me, was nominated for Book of the Year in 2012. And since its release, it has remained at Amazon's top seller in its category. Lisa is working on an audio version of her book, which will be available through Amazon, iTunes, and other outlets as well. Lisa is a co-author of the book Healing from Within, Adventures in Manifesting, as well as Carol Harper's new book, Extraordinary Divorce. Currently, Lisa is putting the finishing touches on her latest book, Healing the Emotions That Bind You Through the Principles of the Law of Attraction. It is a book that she's very proud of, and as a result, and is the result of a lifetime of personal as well as professional recovery work. You can find Lisa on her website at www.healingselfesteem.com and her YouTube channel, which is Lisa A. Romano 1. That's Lisa A. Romano, and the number 1. So I don't want to waste any more time. I want to make sure we get lots of time with Lisa. So I want to bring her on right away. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lisa. How you doing?
Good. How are
you? Glad to be here. Very good. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
I'm very happy. I was finally able to get you on. I'm really excited about maybe having you on our other show, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, one of these days too.
I think that would
be a really. I mean, this book is about a lot of different things, but it's definitely something that works very well for under the spiritual umbrella. But I think it's also a great women's topic as well. So
I agree.
So that's what I was thinking. It would be great to get you on both shows. But for now, you'll have to just live with Just Believe and me.
Okay,
so tell me about what The Road Back to Me is about and why you wrote it.
All right. The Road Back to Me is truly, in my opinion, my baby. It's a story that I believe that I was born to write. For as long as I can remember, I have felt pregnant with information I believed I was supposed to teach others. Growing up, I suffered crippling low self-esteem, and I was confused by this longing I had to write something. But at the time, I couldn't imagine what. When I was 12 years old, I held a gun to my head, and I wanted to die. I had been bullied so severely in school, in addition to suffering at the hands of an emotionally and verbally abusive mother. I simply did not want to live anymore. I just wanted the pain to stop. One day, the bullying at school reached a point where I could not even imagine having to go back to school, not one more day, and so I decided to kill myself. As I stared into my mother's bedroom mirror with this gun to my head, I was weeping terribly, and out of the shadows, I heard a voice say, "Lisa, put the gun down. One day, you will show them." I thought maybe I was going insane. It startled me, but it also got my mind off of thinking about pulling the trigger. In the moments immediately following what I heard, I started thinking about the consequences my suicide would have on my family. I did not pull the trigger, and I decided to tough the rest of the school year out. It was a rough time. I was very alone, and I felt very isolated. But fast forward, I was about 33 years old when my body started breaking down from stress. I was in a terrible, dysfunctional, codependent marriage, and I absolutely needed to get out. When I went into therapy, on that first day, my therapist looked at me and said, "You're not crazy, but you are codependent." I had absolutely no idea what that meant, but I knew in my heart I needed to find out. And so from that moment on, I devoured all the information I could on what it meant to be codependent, because what I learned blew a hole open in my consciousness. I felt drawn to sharing what I had learned in the hopes that my story could help others. So the road back to me just helped bring everything 360 degrees to me. I just want to share what I learned.
Right, right. So explain to me what codependency actually is. I mean, I think we've all heard the term, but I'm not really sure that we really understand what the actual, that somebody could diagnose you with something like that. I mean, what is it?
Well, codependency is basically an emotional dis-ease between mind, body, and spirit. It's rooted in the unconscious belief systems we all hold. It is extremely elusive and complex. It does not have to be associated with any chemical addiction as many people once used to think. Codependent thinking is the result of being raised by codependent, enabling denial, shame, fear, guilt-based parents. For instance, if your mother enabled your father or a sibling, then you were exposed to a codependent mindset. When a being is codependent, they have placed their emotional contentment on something or someone outside of self. When a being expects others to react to them in a certain way, and then the other party does not behave as the being wants them to, and then that being blames his or her happiness or lack of on the being they could not control, then that dynamic is considered codependent. So you can see a very good person can think in a codependent type of way and not even realize it. For instance, if a woman decides to take her mother-in-law to a doctor's appointments, and the woman may expect her mother-in-law to invite her over, let's say, on a Sunday for a big meal, but never tell her mother-in-law that that's what she expects. And so if the mother-in-law has a few friends over and does not invite her daughter-in-law and her family, the daughter-in-law might become upset and blame her mother-in-law for why she's so ornery on that Sunday and perhaps many days after. What the daughter-in-law will fail to realize is she attempted to manipulate and control a dinner invitation, perhaps, out of her mother-in-law by caretaking for her. And when the mother-in-law did not do what her daughter-in-law expected, the daughter-in-law placed her unhappiness and emotional disease on her mother-in-law. It's very elusive, and it's very deep. And it's for years people thought that codependency just had to do with alcoholism, but that's not the case. A wife can be codependent on her husband if she places all of her happiness on him, and she doesn't feel fulfilled unless he does everything that she thinks he should do. You're setting yourself up for failure, because as you and I both know, you're responsible for your own happiness.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. And that, I think too few people realize that, how true that really is.
But how many people get married thinking that their husband or their wife is supposed to make them happy?
I did it too. I mean, I think everybody does that. I think we expect, if we're unhappy, we look for somebody to blame and that's why we immediately, of course, would go to our spouse. Hey, let's blame our husband or wife for, our being unhappy, because, that just makes some kind of sense when the happiness has nothing to do with that, So I don't know. I think it's way over. I think you're right. I think people, I know what my first marriage, when I got married, I was looking for, I think that, it was like person I happened to be dating when I was like, all right, I'm ready to get married now.
Exactly. It was a time thing, right?
Right. I'm ready to have kids now. And, you're gonna make that happen. You're going to be the person that, and it's just so sad, because it really has nothing to do with whether or not that, at least for me, and a lot of my friends as well, but it has nothing to do with whether or not that's necessarily the best person for you to be with. So it's good to see my kids and my kids' friends and, the next generation holding back a little bit, not getting married so young, waiting a while.
I think you and I are both born the same generation,
right.
You're a Pisces also? Are you a Pisces?
No, I'm a Gemini.
I'm a Pisces. were you born in 65?
66.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're around the same age.
Yeah.
My children also, they're definitely holding back, and I'm just so proud of that.
I Me too. I'm always like so grateful that, you know, they're not, my 19-year-old daughter, she's absolutely gorgeous and just, you know, in college, has everything going for her, worked her butt off. I'm in awe of her. I always tell her, I don't know how you do everything you do. She doesn't even want a relationship. She's like, I don't have time for that. That's not my focus right now, you know?
Oh, my God, Lisa, that's awesome.
I know. I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm like, That's awesome.
She's doing her. She's doing herself. You know what I'm saying?
And I wish I'd been like that when I was that age.
Totally.
I don't know. I hope that our generation taught the next generation to, you know, to not relive the same mistakes that we all did.
Well, I think that you writing a book, me writing a book, and having shows like this, we're spreading the word. You know, we're sharing what we learned. I mean, I had to learn. My mother doesn't know this stuff. She doesn't know anything about spirituality, and although she thinks she's religious, but she has nothing to do with being spiritual, obviously. You know, my mother is the adult child of an alcoholic, doesn't even understand what that means. And so I had to go out on my own and devour information and really self, you know, everything that I've learned is self-taught.
Right.
And so that's why it's so important to me, like, to share it, because I know that there's so many other people walking around, like, with blinders on. They have no idea they're even sleeping. Like, they don't even understand there's a better way of living.
I know. I completely agree. There's something so bigger out, you know, so much bigger out there. And you're right. It's like having blinders on, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So tell me about, I know you've spoken publicly that you think that codependency is actually an epidemic.
Yeah, I totally believe that. In my opinion, we've all been birthed into a codependent societal system. In America, and especially for American women, we're targeted for the sake of producing consumers, for the sake of fueling the economy. And how does a society guarantee a woman will be a consumer? By shattering her self-image. By shattering a woman's self-image, advertisers and corporations infuse our society with the sense that who we are as women is not enough, while at the same time they blanket our television, print ads, and radio airwaves with cosmetic advertising, as well as things like advertising for plastic surgery, Botox, Restylane, and the like. And in the air is this sense that our happiness should rely upon how we look, and deeper, what others think about how we look. If you break it down, it is in fact a codependent dynamic, as it is programming beings to place their happiness outside of self. It is so deep, and we could talk for days about how men are targeted as well. Men are told how to be a man. Popular gentlemen's magazines are filled with articles and advertisements that infuse men with someone else's ideas about what it is to be a man, how a man should dress, how he should treat his girl, what kind of car he should drive, what kind of sex he should be involved with, what kind of boat he should buy, and so on. But because beings rarely stop on a whole, I mean, rarely being stopped and question what programming or data they are inviting into their consciousness. So in my opinion, we have a world full of cattle-minded beings who are unaware. Their strings are being pulled by elite powers who understand how to subliminally manipulate a being into caring more about what others think about them than what they think about themselves. That's the crux of codependency. When you care more about what someone else thinks about you than you care about yourself. That's what codependency is all about.
That's so true, too. And I honestly don't know anyone that doesn't spend at least a large chunk of their life caring more about what other people think than what they think. You know what I mean?
Totally.
I see that so much. And I even still struggle with it all these, you know, years into my life. It's sitting there and you see these magazine covers and you're like, oh my God, the person on the magazine cover is 55 years old. And you're thinking, holy God, they look amazing.
Right.
You know, how do you measure up to that? It doesn't matter. It's hard.
I think the problem is, Lisa, what happens, the thing that I would like your listeners to really get today, and this is what I drive home with my personal life coaching clients and in my books, is that you need to become mindful. You need to police your own mind. You need to pay attention to what happens inside your mind when you immediately notice that 55-year-old woman on that magazine. What's happening in your mind at that point? If there's a negative reaction within, that means that that's something that you really need to pay attention to. That you want to get to a point where there's absolutely no reaction, no emotional reaction to what you're seeing. Because at that point, then you know that you're no longer controlled. Because what happens is when we as women look at magazines, we immediately measure ourselves. We compare ourselves to what we're seeing.
Right.
We put ourselves in position number two. Or
right.
three or four or five. And then, you know what, we kick the dog when we get home. Or we eat a bag of potato chips. And it all goes back to we're not good enough.
Right.
That magazine that just proved to me that I'm not good enough. I'll never look like that. And those are the thoughts that we need to pay attention to. And that's being aware and being very mindful and saying, and then creating positive self-talk. Literally rewiring the way your brain works. And saying, that's ridiculous. You know, this woman is, first of all, she's probably photoshopped, and that's the agenda of the magazine, and that's the agenda of the powers, the elite powers that are in control of the media. They want me to feel like crap about myself, and I'm not going to let them do that.
Right.
And that's the way we talk ourselves out of this codependent mindset, this societal system that we're born into.
Right. It's so true. It's so true, and it's so hard to retrain your brain, you know, mm-hmm. to get to the point where you don't even feel a flash of that, you know, just negative thought. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where you see that,
that's
and you're
the
like,
goal.
Oh. Yeah,
I
and
mean,
that, and that,
you know it as well as I do. The goal is to teach every person out there to love self. To absolutely, under any and all conditions, regardless of what's going on around you, you have to love self. Self is connected to source. So you have to love self, you know, regardless of what anyone thinks about you, says about you. And it is truly, I think, the greatest work that we can do is to get to a point where we are no longer affected by what we experience in a negative way. That's it. And we don't let our worth be dictated by what we are seeing on the outside of us.
So basically, we're talking a lot about what my next question would be, which would be, you know, how do you get people to use what you're talking about, use the tools that you're giving them to affect their relationship or their codependent relationships that they have.
Well, the first thing that I do is, first of all, for someone to recognize that their codependent is used, it's no different than going to an AA meeting and being able to stand up and say, my name is Tom and I'm an alcoholic. The first thing is to acknowledge the codependency exists, that, I do worry more about what other people think about me than what I think about myself. What's up with that? So the first thing is to become curious, you know, and then to, you know, just acknowledge that there's something going on that needs to be taken care of, that you need to become more aware of. And then becoming deliberately conscious is the key. So you begin to question everything. So why did I buy those sneakers? Why do I eat at that restaurant? Why do I put my makeup? Why do I have to put my makeup on every time I leave the house? You know,
right.
Do I say yes when I mean no? Do I say no when I mean yes? And why do I do that? You know, ask yourself the really tough questions. You know, why do you carry that bag? You know, why did you buy that bag? Was it because so-and-so had that bag or... You know, why am I going to that party? Is it because I'm worried that people are going to be upset if I don't go? I don't want to go. You know, but why am I going? So it's really about becoming very, very conscious. That's the first step. And you know, what I do with my clients is I take them through that. We do coaching on the phone or whatever, and we just deliberately walk through each thought process and just make them more and more aware of the way their brain is processing data that's coming in. And then by making people aware, then now they have choices. So honestly, to answer that question the best I can is you have to become deliberately conscious.
So what is the difference, though? How do you walk the line, which I would think would be a thin line, between not being codependent, but also not being selfish?
Well, I think that we all have to. I think self-absorbed is different than being selfish, in my opinion. Self-absorbed is it's all about me, it's all about me. I'm not talking about being all about me in a narcissistic way. I'm talking about your friend, you know, your friend just wants you to come hang out on Friday and you have a headache and you really want to take a bath and take care of yourself. It's not selfish for Lisa to take care of herself and take that bath. even if her friend gets upset, come on, Lee, come on over, you know, I'm having a couple of girls over. The issue, the codependency in you would mean, I'm using you as an example. So if you said, screw my headache, she's going to get upset if I don't go, let me go, you're denying self.
Right.
So by not going, you're denying self, and what's happening is, you know, a whole plethora of things will happen. Probably the rest of the evening won't go well because you denied self. You said yes when you meant no. Now, a different situation would be if you knew that there was a party Friday and you just decided last minute you don't want to go, and the hell with what your friend thinks. That's self-absorbed. That's
right.
Selfishness. But when you're self-caring in the sake of loving self, that's not selfish. I had a very difficult time with that because I was raised by a mother who was very narcissistic, and every time I tried to take care of myself, she would label me selfish. And so that was very challenging for me because even when I was in my first marriage, me just saying I'm not happy took me so many years to be able to even say that because my programming was, no, that's selfish. Asking for more is selfish. It's selfish. It's selfish. You know, getting a manicure, no, that's selfish. You know, taking care of myself, that's selfish. So I really had to face that and then learn that selfishness has nothing to do with being self-caring. Selfishness, narcissism, that's a different thing. Being self-absorbed and at the expense of others' feelings, that's not what I'm talking about. And you feel it in your gut.
Yeah, you do. You kind of know. I mean, like, I have this, just this weekend, for example, like, you know, it's just a personal experience that I had. I had, you know, friends that I had, my husband's always, he's gone a lot. He travels for work, so he's not home a lot, and when he is home, he's like, all right, let's go out, and a lot of times it's to get, you know, he's like, let's get you out of the house, you've been cooped up all week, and that's because I work out of my house and everything, and I'm like, oh, that's really sweet, but you know what, I'm just really not into, like, socializing that much tonight, or you know, whatever, and then I'm always guilted in to going, because then before I know it, a friend is texting me, hey, I'm here, come on, you and Scott, come over, you know, and before I know it, I'm going out even though I don't want to go out, and that actually, like, I had a couple experiences, actually, over this weekend, that was that sort of thing, and I'm like, you know what, and I got to a point where I did a compromise, and I'm like, you know what, why don't you guys, if you want to see me, you come to my house, you know, and we'll talk here, you know, we'll
That's
get together
great.
Here. You know, so it was like my way of like compromising through the whole thing because I was just like, I don't know. It's just like, you know, you just get so, just sometimes, and I think personally it's the snow. I know you're buried in it too.
Yep.
But it's just, it's cold outside. It's dreary outside. It's just, you know, you can't see any sight of spring yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
I think what it comes down to is that when you are in the right types of relationships with people, they accept your no.
Right.
They're like, okay, Lee, no problem. And they don't judge you for it. They're not talking about you behind your back because you're not hanging out. You know, when you're in the right types of relationships, it's okay to say no. And you might be in the right types of relationships, and that might be something that, you know, I know for myself, I struggled with that for years, and now I'm finally at a place where I actually think about do I want to go or do I not want to go?
Right.
And if I want to go, I'm there. I'm the first one there.
Absolutely.
But if I don't want to go, I'm like, no, I don't want to go. And I've wrestled with, it's okay if they're pissed off. Like, I can deal with that.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, because you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and you don't want to make anybody angry, and you're sitting there thinking, so instead, you'll take the bullet, kind of, so to speak, and
but
just, you know.
That's codependency. But what you just said was, I don't want to make anyone angry. Codependent children have been taught not to make other people angry.
Right.
And so we live with that fear of light. And the other thing is, depending on how you were raised, you could be raised in a very nice house. But, you know, I was raised by a mother who said, well, think about how the other person feels. I was conditioned to think and worry about how everyone else thought, that I never asked myself, well, what do I want? So it was just so easy. It was seamless for me to end up in a codependent marriage with someone who never cared what I thought. You know, it was just seamless. I mean, that's what I attracted because that's what I was taught. Like, you should worry about everyone else, not yourself. And so I married someone who didn't worry about me, who only worried about himself. And for many years, I couldn't even figure out what was wrong because what I was doing felt so natural to caretake and enable.
Do you think, though, that this more like saying codependency is an epidemic, do you think that that's something that as like our, like that maybe was worse for our generation than will be for our children's generation?
Totally. No. I totally believe that. Absolutely. Because they didn't know any better. You know,
right.
Like, you know, they didn't know. You're talking about my parents are born out of the Depression and in World War II. You know, my grandfather was in World War II. And so, of course, you know, I had to come full circle with that and understand, you know, and forgive and let that go. Because for years I was so angry that, you know, I attracted this dysfunction and my parents never acknowledged, you know, what had happened in our home. They don't even acknowledge that they're crippled adult children of alcoholics. They don't even talk about it. But, you know, part of my recovery work was coming full circle and saying, well, there was no Dr. Phil. You know, there was no Oprah. There
right.
were no, you know, my mother lived in filth and squalor. She was lucky she found food to eat because my grandmother was such a drunk, you know, literally like passed out every day. And so my mother really didn't know any better. And so, but there were other issues. My mother was cruel to me, you know, and that was a little hard for me to get over. But, you know, since the book and everything, we've kind of reconciled. But, you know, yeah, definitely our parents' generation, it was pretty much the norm. And I don't know what faith you grew up in. I grew up being Catholic, and it was ingrained. Selfishness
That's what I was just going to ask you is how do you feel religion is part of this? Now, I grew up Protestant. I grew up Methodist, so I didn't have the Catholic, I know what they call the Catholic guilt thing going on or any of that. But still, you're taught to be charitable. You're taught to put others before you. Do you think religion is a big reason why everybody is suffering from this codependency?
I really do, and I think, I have my own thoughts. You know, I believe that God is within us, you know, but in the Catholic faith, we were taught that God was outside of us, and that, you know, we were born with sin, and so we weren't even good enough to go to God. We had to go to a middleman to talk to God. You know, we had to go to confession, and I was 7 years old, and I'm thinking to myself, this doesn't make sense. You know, it just, at seven, I was questioning, like, what is going on? You know, and back then, it's much different now, but back then, we were taught to fear God. You know, meanwhile, that has nothing to do with God.
I wrote about that in my book, too, where it was just like, you know, sitting there, when my grandparents would be reading the Bible to me, you know, when I'd be over their house, I'd be maybe 6, 7 years old, whatever, be sitting there and them being like, you know, reading these things, and I'm like, that's just not true. You know,
exactly.
That's not mean like that. That's not something that happened. That's not true. God would not do that, you know, and me being like a blasphemous because I was, you know, talking bad about, you know, about their religion and God and me just being like, just having that intuitive knowing that that's not the way it is, you know? So that's so funny because we're both around the same age, you know, already feeling almost injustice, you know, like, what do you mean, you know?
Yeah. And I always felt, you know, I felt in my heart that, you know, and I don't know, there's no proof. No one will ever know for sure, you know, that the Bible to me has been totally distorted and it's been ripped apart. And unfortunately, well, in the Catholic faith, it's been used as a fear tactic to get people into mass so that they can, you know, donate their money and, you know, and don't use birth control. And from a spiritual aspect, it just doesn't make sense. And then Catholics claim, and oh my Lord, Catholics claim that, you know, if you're not Catholic, you can't get into heaven.
I know. Yeah. And it's not just Catholics. I grew up with a Presbyterian uncle, and he would straight out I'd hear him arguing with my dad about, you know, we were Protestant Methodist, not Presbyterian, so we were going to hell. And my dad used to laugh at him and be like, you know what, I can't wait to see you in heaven. I can't wait to see you in heaven because, you know, you think you're I'm going to hell because I'm not Presbyterian. I mean, I think a lot of religions, you know, and I've always said, and I've said this publicly many times, that I kind of feel like, you know, God as the universe, God as the all, you know, sent us prophets to teach us.
Right.
And that we, as human beings, separated those lessons into religion.
For our own reasons, for our own greedy reasons, absolutely.
it wasn't supposed to, in my opinion, it wasn't supposed to ever be that way. It was supposed to just different people to teach us, you know, to teach us about you know, really spirituality, not the religion thing became a whole different thing.
Totally. I think when I think that there's a Christ consciousness, and I think that that's across the board. And I think that, you know, in my own, I believe the Bible is a lot about symbolism. You know, when Christ is known to say, I'm the way, I'm the truth and the light, I think what he's saying is that, you know, I can show you the way, you know, and Christ lives within you. So you really are the way, and like tell your truth and everything will fall into place. Like your mind, body and soul, when you tell the truth, you integrate mind, body, and soul. The Trinity that you are comes together. When you deny yourself, when you deny something, that if you're in a relationship and you're not facing something, you're splitting. You're splitting. You're separating yourself. And physical things happen. You know, energy gets disrupted in your system. But when you begin to tell the truth, there is an integration of mind, body, and soul that is so resurrecting. And talk about being born again. I mean, you die to the, once you start telling your truth, and you know you're a woman who has done that in your life. You know, I was a woman who didn't tell my truth. You know, I didn't know what my truth was. And then all of a sudden I start getting a hold of, wow, this is pretty easy. I just got to tell my truth. You know, and I literally felt myself being born again, and I felt like I resurrected. I feel like I found heaven on earth. And that might sound corny to some people, but that's really how I feel. Like, as it is below, so shall it be above. You know, so, like, if you're not telling the truth within your gut, then that's what's going to manifest. There's a lot of disruption in your life. You know, but when you start telling the truth and you start living from your soul, you know, as it is below, so it is as it is above, then all of a sudden your life turns into this beautiful, deliberate, abundant experience that you didn't even know was possible before you started telling the truth. And that's what my book is all about.
Right. And how do you tell, like, your clients and even the people that have read your book or that are, you know, thinking about buying your book, how do you tell them to begin telling their truth? How do they access that within themselves?
It's a very slow process. And, you know, it's just like, you know, we've all heard it said, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And
right.
So anyone that's on my website or anyone who's listening to a radio station like this or picks up my book or your book, you know, they're interested in something more. And so anyone who seeks me out, I know that they've sought me out, they've been attracted to me, and they're ready to hear something different. And so, you know, helping people, first of all, they have to want to change. You know, unfortunately, a lot of my clients are at the rope's end. They're at a point where they're like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but obviously I'm doing everything wrong because nothing works.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. And then we just take it, tell me a little bit about your life, tell me what's going on, tell me about your relationships, tell me how you – I mean, I recently had a client who, you know, who called me, and he had a very rough relationship with the girl that he's been in and out of a relationship with for 20 years. And, you know, she's cheated on him time and time again, cheated on her first husband, cheated on her second husband, but he can't get over this attraction to her. And so we start talking, coaching, and I say, okay, tell me how you grew up. And he's like, I don't want to talk about how I grew up. I just want to talk about this girl. And I'm like, no, you have to tell me about how you grew up. Tell me about your relationship with your dad. Tell me about your relationship with your mom. Well, you could probably write the story. I'm sure you understand what happened. Turns out his mother cheated on his father.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out that his mom was emotionally abusive to him. His mother was very emotionally neglectful. His mother was very narcissistic. It was all about her. And so I had to make my client slowly understand, you know, and he did, you know, week after week, we just kept digging and kept digging, where he finally understood, like, you're kidding me. So my attraction to this woman is not love. I said,
right.
No, it's your negative attracting set point. It's your
right.
blueprint. It's your vibration. That's what you're emanating. That's your frequency. That's what you're tuned up for. And it was rather devastating for him.
Sure.
On one level, but very, very freeing on another level because
right.
he was freed of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see how that would happen because you,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're like, in some ways when you have someone that teaches you what's so obvious,
right.
you know, It's like you're like, whoa, how did I not see that, you know?
And well, it's like if you take a tree, right, and you're a bug that's on the tree, you don't know. From that bug's perspective, you're so close to that tree, you don't know you're even on a tree.
Right.
But if you're the bird in the tree, you kind of have an idea that you're in a tree. But if you're the person across the street, or 100 feet away, you know that that is a beautiful, gigantic, you know, maybe a 300-foot tree. But if you're the bug on that tree, you don't even know it's a tree. And so being so close to the dysfunction, you can't see it, and that there's no crime in that, no crime in that. And so it's so beautiful whenever anyone reaches out and says, help me, because, you know, ask and it is given. You know,
right.
That's the way it works.
Hey, anyone listening, by the way, any of our listeners who want to, we are live tonight, so any of our listeners who want to listen to or want to ask Lisa a question, if you're not listening to the archives, meaning what's going to be in there later, if you're listening to the show live, please feel free to call in at 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. If you press 1, I'll see you in the queue and I'll get you on the air with Lisa if you have any questions you want to ask her. Anyway, Lisa, I just want to put that out there so that when the second half of the show, people know that they can
Absolutely. They
can ask you questions if they want to. But you know, I think that says so much, and it's so interesting because when you say like your clients come to you when they're at their wit's end, when they've done everything else, and that's what I find with my clients too. And a lot of times, my clients, it's after even medication, like after they've
been on
antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, and all this different stuff, and they're like, they're not working. I'm like, because there's nothing to fix with pills. It's not.
Right, exactly.
I mean, sometimes there is. Absolutely. Sometimes there is. You know, something that needs that you can fix with pills. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of ways, you know, it's sad because they get to that point where they come to people like you and me after they've reached a point of desperation to. And when they're finally recognizing, okay, there's something I'm missing. There's something deeper inside of me that, you know, that a doctor can't find in an X-ray or, you know, or there's nothing to glue back together. There's just something, you know, there's some kind of imbalance. And then I get people that just, I mean, and I'm sure you do too, that don't understand, you know, we are energetic beings. We are made
Absolutely.
Of energy. So energy can, of course, heal. Energy can, of course, be used to heal a person, mind, body, and spirit. And and to me, it's such like a common sense thing. You know what I mean? It's just, that just makes sense. It always has to me. But for other people, it can be very confusing. You know, they really don't understand that because they're so used to their doctors curing all their ailments. And you know, some things, you know, you just can't put a Band-Aid on. You know, you actually have to.
I think that's part of the codependent epidemic.
Right.
I mean, how many advertisements do you see on television for antidepressants?
A lot.
And so we're actually training people to believe that I'm unhappy, I need an antidepressant. No, you got to figure out what's going on inside of you. On an emotional level, because your emotions are going to dictate what energy you're sitting in and what energy you're giving off. Everything comes down to the way you feel. And the way you feel is based, a lot of it is based on how you process information. Well, how you process information is the result of what you perceived as a child.
Right.
And what you were conditioned and programmed to believe was true. As a child, I mean, you look at your parents, and so if your parents are dysfunctional and they don't talk to one another, you go out in the world and you're trying to attract a mate, but you get involved with people who don't want to talk to you, and then you're like, wow, this sucks, this isn't fulfilling, but you don't know how to be intimate. You don't even know that there's a problem. You just all you know is that you've attracted someone who doesn't talk like you don't talk, you don't communicate, and you're still unfulfilled.
Right.
Now, if we don't go back in time and figure out what do you think love is supposed to be? What's it supposed to feel like? What's it look like? Tell me about your parents. Tell me what you believe. And you know as well as I do, like once people get into alignment with what they believe and what they want and what they desire and what they believe that they're worthy of, once you get people into alignment with that, energy begins to change.
Yeah.
It
Absolutely.
Begins to flow.
Absolutely. And it's interesting from a Reiki perspective too. And you don't do Reiki, do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay. I didn't remember that part. But I know when I do Reiki, and my way of doing Reiki is going right for the chakras. I don't do the typical Reiki treatment.
Right.
I'm going right for the chakras, and I'm healing everything through the chakras, the seven major chakras. And I can tell you that probably 95% of my clients, their problem starts in their root chakra. And that root chakra is where all that childhood trauma is from. And so, and that's where the codependency, you know, started. That's what we were taught. We were taught to put everybody before us. And, you know, I found that it's amazing to see, you know, you think, oh, okay, maybe this person, it's right from, and then if the root chakra is blocked, then guess what? None of the other chakras are going to be working.
Back to the childhood thing, like if you're raised, if a parent doesn't understand, it is her or his job to infuse a sense of self, a healthy sense of self into a child. It must be mirrored into that child, because a child is like a blank computer. Like, they don't know. So if you're ignoring that child, they're not, the data they're receiving is negative. You don't have to tell a child they're bad. All you have to do is not tell them that they're, don't spend time telling them that they're good. They will imagine that they're bad. And so talk about the root chakra. So this child who has never been told that they're good doesn't know that they're good. This is not information that comes to them, comes to children on their own. You need to input this type of data into a child so that they can grow up and get to the next stage of emotional development, and then the next stage and evolve. And I think that a lot of parents, they don't understand how important it is, especially in the early years, is to infuse the children with smiles. Smile back at your child. You know, you can discipline a behavior, but make sure the child understands that the behavior isn't indicative of the child's self-worth. There are two different issues.
Right.
You know, if a little girl doesn't get enough of daddy's attention, that's a root chakra issue.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, or if mom is a little weirdly jealous of the daughter, you know, and she can't and never gets her mother's validation, you know, that's a root chakra issue. If mom is addicted to pain medication or is bulimic or anorexic and just can't show up emotionally for the daughter, then that's a root chakra issue.
Absolutely. And that's why I think so many people are out of balance, mind, body, and spirit-wise, because of the fact that, you know, nothing can be operating right. If your number one chakra is not working right, then nothing in your body is going to be working right.
And that's this
is where chakra balancing, chakra healing, and Reiki, you know, any energy work in itself is so crucial, and something that, you know, they're not going to find it on a CAT scan. They're not going to find it, you know, they're not going to find it in blood work. It's something that, you know, that you have to find, you know, through somebody who works with energy like that.
Absolutely.
And it's just so important to, you know, to put that out there, that so many of our issues begin in childhood. And you can look back on your childhood and be like, well, I had a good childhood. It doesn't mean you don't have damage from
that
good childhood. It doesn't mean you weren't programmed. You weren't programmed to believe things that are not serving you well as an adult now, you know. Doesn't make your parents bad. It doesn't make it doesn't make your childhood bad. It just means that you need to make up your own mind about things. You need to go at it from a different way.
Well, if you're a young woman in society and you're not happy in relationships, then you need to go back and figure out. You have to go back and what is your role model for a relationship? Now, if you were labeled selfish as I was, it's really hard to have a fulfilling relationship if you're always judging yourself. Because what happens is the programming that you receive as a young woman, for instance, in that situation is, well, I'm selfish if I ask him to show up on time.
Right.
if he doesn't show up on time, that's okay. Meanwhile, it's eating you up inside.
Yeah, right.
And so now you build a life on that. So this guy thinks, hey, this is great. You know, I don't have to show up on time. My last girlfriend was always complaining because I was late. He marries this poor woman who thinks she's selfish by expecting him to do the right thing. And, you know, 10, 15 years later, she wants out of the marriage, and she's completely lost. And she said now she has 15 years of damage with someone who was emotionally unavailable because of her childhood. That's what she learned love was.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's so true. And you can look at, it doesn't matter how great your childhood was. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't make it, like I said, it doesn't make your parents bad parents. It's just, you know, I'm a parent. I've got a 20-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 15-year-old, and I'm sure that, well, actually, my 19 and 20-year-old point out often the mistakes.
Oh, mine too.
You know,
but that's a healthy thing. That's a healthy thing.
I'm like, okay, I'm like, that's fine. That's fine. You can do it differently when you're my age. You know,
that's
when you have your
own kids,
you do it your way. I learned from the things my parents didn't do right. So that's just the
but
way
it
so works.
It's so healthy that your children can come to you and say, "Hey, Mom, I'm not happy with that." Because for instance, the way I grew up, I would never ever confront my parents because I was taught to fear that. There was the no talk rule. You're not allowed to talk. You're not allowed to have feelings. You're not allowed to express yourself. You're not allowed to cry. You're not allowed to do anything but sit there and just act like you're happy. So the fact that your children and my children can come to us and they feel free enough to, they know that we're not going to reject them. We know that we honor their feelings. You know, I always say that, you know, say what you mean, but don't say it mean.
Exactly. You know? That's so true. Because that's something that teenagers do have a tendency to wrestle with a little bit. Is there? You know, you can tell me anything you want to tell me, but please do it in a somewhat respectful manner.
I agree with you. It's a struggle. Mm-hmm. I hear you.
You know, one of the things that I thought was funny is that, and not funny in the haha way, but interesting, was that with your first book, it took you 12 years. To publish it.
Right.
Why?
My family, well, like I said earlier, my family is extremely codependent, and we were all worried about what my father or my mother thought about us and what we as siblings thought about one another, and we were not taught, like we just said, to rock the boat, and I was very much the black sheep or the pain in the butt who tried from time to time to shed light on how dysfunctional our family was. I was also seen with my first marriage. I was seen by my family, and they told me so, as like a prima donna because I married a man who owned a construction company, and he built us this beautiful custom-built home. My family resented me for rocking the boat and saying, "I'm not happy in my marriage." In fact, when I told my father and my mother I wanted a divorce, I told them my marriage was killing me and that I was unhappy, and my father looked me in the eye and said, "Who said you have to be happy, Lisa? Do you think your mother and I are happy? All you have to do is survive." So I knew that writing my book was going to throw an apple cart, the apple cart that my family was, right off the bridge, because it was going to expose all the hidden dysfunction. And I knew once I published my book, my relationships with all of them would probably end. And I was terrified, unfortunately, in a codependent way, of how they would feel, because I really didn't want to hurt them.
So it sat there on the shelf for 12 years before. So what was the turning point? What changed? What made you publish it?
Well, one night my brother called me and told me that our brother-in-law, our sister's husband, committed suicide. Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law and my sister were in, not surprising, were in a very dysfunctional, enabling, codependent marriage. And after 23 years, my sister was done. She wanted out. She was tired of caretaking, tired of enabling. My brother-in-law didn't work at the time, and she just totally coddled him. And one day it just became too much, and she wanted out. And he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the idea of living without my sister. And he had placed all of his happiness and on her. And when he realized that it was over, he one afternoon went in the backyard and shot his head off. And I knew in that moment The Road Back to Me had to be published, because I knew that my book could potentially help someone out there who was living a codependent life and who was depressed, who was unaware that there was a way out. And what my family was going to think about me anymore, it didn't matter. Helping others heal became my total focus, and I've never looked back.
So how did they handle it when the book came out, and how are they handling it even now?
Originally, when I never told them. that I published the book.
Really?
I never told them. I never told them. I knew they weren't going to understand it, and so that was my boundary. There was no. I just decided, like, you know, they're not even going to get it. Like, I had to tell you the truth, Lisa. I had moved beyond their needing their validation. I mean, I spent probably 30-something-odd years seeking their validation, and I never got it. And so, you know, by the time I got divorced and I was a single mom for so many years and they never helped, it was terrible. By the time I published the book, I was like, I'm done. You know, like, I reached a point with my brother-in-law's suicide, like, you can hate me if you want to. So, you know, I just decided not to tell them and to just do what I had to do. But when my ex-husband and my brother found out about the book, they actually spoke to each other, and my brother told my ex-husband that my family wanted nothing to do with me, that you know, people who don't have never written a book think that you make a lot of money when you write a book.
I know.
You know, you write a book and everyone thinks you're rich. No, it doesn't work that way. It should, but so
apparently, unless you write, like, you know, the Harry Potter series or the vampire whatever,
or you get picked up by a big publishing house, which is always the case. Listen,
yeah.
It could happen to you. It can happen to me. Someone could hear this radio show and get really interested in your book or my book, and miracles happen. There's no doubt. But my family's impression was that I wrote this book for a profit. And so I was like, nope, that they're wrong. And I was like, getting back to what we discussed earlier, I was like over caring what they thought. So I was like very accepting, like, okay, if that's the way they want to see me, they can see me that way. I can't change that. But it was very difficult at the same time, because I understood that I was losing my entire family. So for about a year, we didn't talk, and then one afternoon, my mom called me and told me she knew about the book, which shocked me. And, you know, I was standing up when she called, and she said, Lisa, I want you to know I know about the book, and, like, my heart stopped. And she said, I'm very proud of you, and I just, like, I almost buckled. I was like, wow.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. She goes, I want you to know I'm very proud of you. She said,
Did she read the book?
She didn't read. She read the first on Amazon. You can get the first three chapters for free.
Right.
So she read the first three chapters, and I don't think she wanted to go any further because I was brutally honest about the way she treated me.
Right.
And so I don't think that I probably wouldn't even want to read a book that my child wrote. I'm being honest, because
no, I wouldn't. Oh my God, no.
Yeah.
No.
So, you know, my mom did a lot of things out of, you know, just out of ignorance. She was only 19 when she had me, and, you know, she was under a lot of pressure, and she took a lot of her anxiety out on me. My mother was very anxious and depressed, and I bore the brunt of it, and I wrote about that, how that crippled my sense of self and self-esteem, and I thought I was the worst thing going. And so it parlayed into school, and this is why I ended up being bullied, because I was tuned up for it. My first bully was my mom. And so, you know, that's the reality of it. And so when I went to school, I attracted more bullies. You know, and I really thought that this was my fate. Like, life for me, I hated life when I was younger. I thought this is, and I know I'm not alone. Kids contact me on YouTube. They contact me on my website very often, as a matter of fact. And they talk about being bullied at home and how, being bullied at home usually means you're going to get bullied at school. And so, but when my mom told me she was proud of me, that just meant everything to me. And she said, I can't be angry because I understand the message and everything that you said is true. So it's very validating.
Yeah, that you know what, and it has to, and that's, I think, the difference. Instead of looking necessarily for her okay or her approval, you were looking for her to validate that she knows that you did not have the world's perfect childhood, that she made mistakes, you know?
I think, you know what, I had even at that point, I was beyond that. I really never, I'd never expected my mom or my dad to ever say, to tell the truth. I never expected it. That is just a flat-out, honest truth. I thought my parents are going to never bring this book up. I'm never bringing the book up around them. I'm just not, because it's like, you know, it's like ripping scabs off, you know? And so I really didn't – I know some people need to hear their parents say, I know I did this to you and I know it was wrong. But I really had grown so much that I was like, it's okay. You know, like, I know why I wrote this book. It's all about healing. Even in the introduction, I write, you know, if anyone to read this, when someone reads this book, they might think it's about vendettas, and if someone would presume that, they would be wrong. My book is all about healing and helping. Really, I believe I wrote my book to help trigger memories in their readers because, you know, as adults, we get so caught up in, you know, a dysfunctional marriage or a poor relationship with a child or a poor relationship with a parent that we forget that these are all manifestations of something that's happened to us in the past. And so, you know, I wrote my book helping with the intent to trigger people's memories. And that's been talk about validating. When people get in touch with me and say, I couldn't put your book down, you know, it was just my life. You know, I relate to so much of what you say. Or, you know, once in a while I'll get someone who writes me and says, I had to put the book down because I was pulled back in time and I remember exactly feeling the way that you expressed feeling. And now I make the connection to why I care so much about what other people think about me. I'm seeking validation.
And what do you, and how do you tell them to get over that? I mean, because basically they have to, right? Get through it.
You really can't tell someone to just, well, get over it. It happened and it's over. You really have to help a client progress through those stages because there's a lot of healing that has to happen, a lot of you know, a lot of grief work that has to get done because you need to grieve because your attention has been on others when all this time the attention should have been on self.
Right.
And then there's obviously, you know, there's a very normal sense of anger. Like, wait a minute, like my mother was supposed to validate me always. Yeah, wasn't supposed to withhold it. My dad was supposed to validate. Yeah, you were supposed, your whole life, yeah, you were supposed to be validated. And you know, once people realize that they've been spinning their wheels, looking in the wrong directions, and then, you know, a lot of people have to, you know, getting back to the client that I was just talking about, you know, the man that's been involved with this woman, he didn't realize that he was trying to control her. He wanted her to be someone else. Like, he was locked in this dynamic with her because in his head he was right. You're not supposed to cheat on someone that you love. Okay, for some people that's a no-brainer. But when you grow up as the cheater, And you know, you've been raised and well, her parents, it's kind of very deep, but she was raised to be self-absorbed. Her parents overindulged her, almost in a pathological way. So she had no boundaries. She didn't think that she didn't have any empathy for others. So my client's looking to change this woman. And so when he realizes that the issue is his, he needs to accept her for who she is, decide whether or not she feels good in his life or if she adds to his life, and if she doesn't, let her go. So when he realized that he was trying to control her, that was very sobering for him. Like, he wanted to be angry at her.
Right, yeah.
And so there are so many stages that you have to go through, but basically at the end of the day, where my recovery work comes down to through the talk therapy that I do is I help people understand that they have to fall in love with self first.
Yeah.
And once you fall in love with self, then and you make your relationship with self more important than any relationship that you have with any other human being. I don't care who it is. Once you commune with self, you learn that everything that you ever needed to live a happy life is within you. So now you're not worried about controlling your husband. You're not worried about controlling your children. You know, if they want to go out, you can go curl up on the couch and read a book. You don't need them to make you happy. You don't need them to validate you. And then life starts to fall into place. And then you start attracting people who can love you because your emotional set point has changed. You love you.
Right. Absolutely.
So it comes down to teaching them that they are love. They were born of divinity. That, you know, unfortunately they were born into a dynamic that was dysfunctional, but that has nothing to do with who they are as a human being. Who they are is perfect and divine, outside of their programming. Programming is what was done to them. That's not who they are.
Right.
And that's the kind of work I do.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk about is the know the work you're doing now, that you know the things that you're working on now. You wrote the Road Beyond Or the road back
my,
to me.
My road, and, right, the road back to me, my road beyond the codependent divorce.
Right, my road back to me, and my road beyond the codependent divorce.
Right.
And what was
Loving the Self Affirmations. That's an affirmation book. So what I do is, you know, affirmations help me tremendously, because when you're breaking the codependency cycle in your mind,
mm-hmm.
you really need to stay focused, and it's all about policing your mind and getting very, very mindful and observing how your mind works. And so affirmations definitely help keep you grounded, and that's why I wrote that book, and it does help.
Yeah, affirmations are really interesting. I always used to tell people I didn't like affirmations,
mm-hmm.
But they're like, then why are you constantly posting them on Facebook and Twitter? Like, no, those aren't affirmations. Those are quotes. Different.
Right.
There's not much of a difference there. I mean, somebody said it before you once, that's all.
Right, you know, there you go.
They got quoted. But, you know, but affirmations are so, so important to be able to to truly find a way to,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the things I always say is I'm a teacher of forgiveness, and I think we have
mm-hmm.
so many things we have to forgive ourselves for before
yep.
we even start trying to forgive other people in our lives.
Absolutely.
And that forgiveness is something that, you know, that is kind of we do for ourselves. You know, it's something that makes us be able to move forward. So all of that's so important, and I think that's you know that's something that you work on through affirmations, and
mm-hmm.
and I you know I'm really excited. Now you have another book coming out.
Right.
When do you know when you're going to release that yet?
Well, it's already written, and like I said, when you and I were speaking earlier, I'm going to approach Health Communications Inc. and with a book proposal, and so I don't know. I'm going to see where that goes. I really do believe it's going to be a good match for them.
Right.
You know, if that doesn't work out, then I'll self-publish it again. I might shop around for another publisher or two, but then I'll just self-publish it because I believe in the work. Because I'm always growing, which is awesome, you know, and you'll always grow, and
right.
that's what's so great about being an aware human being, because you get it. Like, you just when you think you know everything, you know, you learn, like, oh, damn, there's more to learn, you know, which is...
I don't know anything yet.
Right. I love that. But I'm also a very open human being. You know, I understand life, and I'm ready for it. Like, just teach me. I want to learn, you know, and I love that, and I love being somebody who takes what she learns and then shares it, you know. And I love that. So my next book is about is really special to me because it's really sort of like it brings everything, like I said, 360 for me, because now I understand that everything that I've ever experienced in my life was representative of something that was going on inside of me, even the craziness that showed up. If there was something negative going on in my experience, then I never realized that was a projection of something that was going on inside of me that I wasn't paying attention to.
Right. Right.
So, so right now the book that I'm working on is it relates to emotional recovery work and how that goes hand in hand with the law of attraction. So, you know, can I expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so we've all been told that like attracts like, and that birds of a feather flock together. But what we need to understand is that the attracting thing that we're referring to is vibrational in nature.
Right.
So you and I both know we're in agreement that we are vibrational beings more than we are physical beings, and that our emotions are what dictate what our vibrational offering is, which is our attracting point. Everybody wants to talk about the law of attraction. I get clients all the time like, help me use law of attraction to get that house. I'm like, do you think you deserve that house?
Yeah.
Like, do you think you deserve that house? You know, so it's very interesting. So helping people understand that their emotions are actually the attracting point, not the thought.
Right.
People think all I have to do is think happy thoughts.
I always tell my clients, it's like, you know, they're like, well, you know, I really want this new car, and I keep saying, I want it, and you tell the universe that I want it, and I'm like, yeah, but do you ever raise your energy up? Do you ever, like, picture yourself sitting in that car and looking around that car and being and just feel the excitement that would be?
Right.
Or how about the way that car smells and, or, you know, what it looks like to look out the window and see that car? Those are the things that the universe responds to, not so much the I want, I want, I want.
You know,
right.
That's,
and I think that's unfortunate because most people have been are under the impression that the living the secret and the law of attraction is about thinking. No, it's about feeling.
Right.
And it's you know, talk about the Bible. The Bible is a living, breathing example of the law of attraction. Walk by faith, not by sight. It is staying committed to a vision, even though it hasn't manifested in the reality. And that's really tough to do because people are so anchored in the physical.
Right.
And so if they can't visualize themselves in the happy relationship, if they can't imagine that, you know, put a ring on your finger. If you want to be in a relationship, put a ring on your wedding finger.
Right.
Put a ring on it. Act as if it is. You know, dream it into being. But, you know, people don't understand that it's your emotional set point is going to dictate your attracting point. So, for instance, if I was raised in a dysfunctional home, then I have been queued up for dysfunction. If the relationship, for instance, between my mother and I was abrasive as a child, I've suffered a blow to my self-esteem and I've not been able to develop a healthy sense of self. Because all children define their worthiness by how mother or father defines their worthiness. If I have been emotionally manipulated, abandoned, and alike, then my emotional and or vibrational set point, which is my attracting point, is unhealthy. So from that standpoint, I can only attract what I am, which is unhealthy and sadly negative. So healing from within requires making that which is unconscious conscious. Many of my clients heal quickly once they connect the dots and they understand that they are not broken, but their attracting point is, so to speak.
Right.
And so recently I was just coaching a woman who was married to an abusive alcoholic, and it wasn't until I asked her if her father or mother was an alcoholic did she even make the connection. She's a middle-aged woman who never even contemplated the notion that perhaps being raised by an alcoholic tuned her up. So in my next book, I'm talking about what tuned you up for that dysfunction.
Right.
So she just wasn't even aware that she was tuned up for attracting an alcoholic as a spouse. And so, like, opening her eyes to understanding that as an adult, she attracted the equivalent, birds of a feather flock together, she attracted the equivalent to what she experienced as a child because that was her unconscious emotional set point, and it really has propelled her recovery work.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a fascinating book. I can't honestly to read that from your perspective because all the law of attraction books kind of like I get what they're saying, but they're not saying something that's really been, I don't know. I always feel like they're missing something because people are misunderstanding.
I agree.
The truth about the law of attraction. So
right.
I like that you're going to write a book. It'll be interesting to read that book from your perspective, because to me it's going to be a lot like my perspective is of the law of attraction.
And, it just makes sense because you know, so many people are running around, and you know it. I mean, I know I have friends that are married not once, not twice, not three times, four, five, six times, and I'm like, you keep attracting the same person in a different package.
Yep. Same.
And so,
same,
you know, and they all resemble your Uncle Tim. Isn't that interesting? So, you know, and we, you know, so I think, in my opinion, you know, I was one of them. You know, when I first became aware of the law of attraction, like, okay, I'll think happy thoughts. And I was like, wait a minute. You know, if I think about a happy relationship, but I don't feel like I'm worthy of a happy relationship, that's not going to work. You have to feel worthy. You have to see it. You must believe it, and you must walk by faith. Regardless, I don't care. You have, if you want to, be in a happy relationship, then, or if you want to be in a relationship, let's say you're single, then you have to truly believe that it's going to happen. It's just a matter of things falling into place. But in the meantime, you have to think, be, and behave and do as if you were married or as if you were in a really happy relationship. That means you get dressed up, you put your makeup on, you put your perfume on. That means you shave your legs. That means you act like you're married and you don't tell anybody because people make fun of you, you know, because he hasn't shown up yet. You shut your mouth. You just play this game in your head, you know, or you write it in your journal.
You actually say in your book, The Codependent Divorce, my road beyond codependent divorce, but I'm like making things simple here.
Okay.
But you manifested, you kind of feel like you manifested your new husband.
Oh, I know I did. I know I did. When I was 43, I decided by the time I was 45, I was going to be ready for a healthy, loving, mutually satisfying relationship. It's something that I wanted more than anything. And I was at a point where I was ready for that. So my children were getting older, and my youngest would be 13 by the time I was 45. And as a single mom for 14 years, I dated but kept men out of my children's lives. Because early on in my divorce, I dated a man or two and introduced them to my children, and that did not end well. And I was in a bad place right after the divorce. And after the second man that I dated turned out to be not who I thought he was, I decided I would no longer introduce men to my children unless I was certain he was worth my children's time. Right. So for many years, I dated on and off during times when my children were with their dad. So as I evolved as a woman and as a single mom, my priorities constantly shifted. And at around the age of 43, I decided that I wanted to manifest a man that my children could be proud of. I really felt at that point in my life I had done all that I could do as a single mom. I had faced an unhealthy relationship. I had, you know, I walked through that storm as tough as it was. I held my head up high. You know, I did what I thought I needed to do for the sake of breaking this cycle of codependency and, you know, learning to hear my own voice. And I learned to love myself while being a single mom. So I felt like I had shown my children, you know, I'd started my own company and, you know, I supported my own children and my home on my own and my kids on my own. So, you know, I felt like I showed my kids as much as I could, but most people end up in relationships. And so I thought, if I don't show my children how to be in a healthy relationship, then I'm doing them a disservice. So
right.
I really believed that I wasn't going to be fulfilled as a mom and as a woman unless I was able to do that for my children so that they had something to model after, because they only had a negative experience with their dad and I.
Right.
And so this was really important to me. So, you know, I wrote a letter to the universe, and I ran crazy with it. I told the universe, by the time I'm 45, I'm going to be ready to manifest a relationship that makes me feel secure, loved, appreciated, and heard. And I even wrote, I'm not even kidding you. I could actually show you the letter. I wrote, I want a snazzy dresser. He should smell good. And I want him to be able to dance because I love to dance. And he had to be financially independent, good with money, and, you know, he had to be able to love my children and get along with my friends because my friends are like my family. And so, believe it or not, my husband Anthony asked me out for the first time on my 45th birthday. And in fact, I'm not even kidding. I had forgotten all about the letter I wrote to the universe 2 years earlier. And we were married this May 11th.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, and I did things like, you know, when I first met Anthony, it was very. I mean, the first time I met him, I said, "That's him." My spirit was just jumping
right.
up and down like, "That's him." I just knew intuitively, like, this is the guy you've been waiting for.
Yep.
And I never looked back, but. You know, and then while we were dating about a year, I was like, I would love to marry this man. And I had not felt that as a single woman for like 14 years, 15 years. Like, I said, I'll never get married again until I met him. And so I went out and I bought this huge, you ever see those crystal paperweights that are shaped like diamonds?
Yeah, yeah.
So I bought that and I put that on my desk. And that represented, in my mind, no, I didn't tell anybody. And this is the first time I'm saying it out loud. But, you know, in my mind, that represented an engagement ring.
Okay, yeah.
And so it was not long after that he asked me to marry him. It was a complete surprise because we'd never talked about it.
Oh, really? So you never even brought it up again?
Never.
Which happens most often. You usually talk about it. It takes a brave man to do that without talking to you about it first, actually.
Oh, yeah. He did it during a Halloween party in front of all of our friends. We were dressed as I Dream of Jeannie. He was Anthony Nelson, and I was Jeannie. It was quite interesting.
Oh, that's cute. I love it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But I still do that now. If there's something that, you know, because now I understand how this law of attraction thing works. I understand there's a time factor. I understand that, you know, that you have to believe that it's already happened. You literally have to practice the idea that what you want has already arrived. And, you know, it does you well not to tell anybody. I mean, at least that works for me. I don't tell anybody. If there's something that I'm working on in my head, like, I keep it to myself or I write it in my journal. But,
right. Yeah. I'm the same way. I don't like, if people know, then I don't know if it's like that you don't want them asking you about it. You got to do it in your own time, your own way. You know, you don't need anybody babysitting you with it or something. I don't know if that's or whatever, but tell everybody, since we're coming to the end of the show, how people can get a hold of you and what you do for them, not just about your books. And, you know, obviously they can find your books on Amazon.com. Barnes & Noble's, a lot of, you know, the typical places that sell books, I guess.
Right.
But what else do you have out there that, I know you do counseling and you don't have to be local for that. Your life coaching and things. So why don't you take a few minutes and tell everybody what you have to offer and how they can reach you.
Well, I'm a life coach, a full-time life coach, and you can reach me on my website at www.healingselfesteem.com. You can reach out to me on AOL at Lisa A. Romano at AOL. I'm all over the Internet. All you have to do is Google my name. And what I do is I help people transition through various stages of recovery, and I basically help them come into alignment with their true purpose and why they're here. And that is, you know, once you learn to love self, then everything else falls into place. You discover your passions, and it becomes natural to follow your bliss. And suddenly you remember things that you loved that you used to do, or you remember things that you'd like to do, and you begin to be able to do them. And I help people tell their truth. And, you know, I'm passionate about it, and this codependency thing is huge. And most of us are codependent to some degree, and we just don't realize it. But once people become aware of it, then I'm able to help them become even more aware of it in everyday life. And then together we apply different types of tools that they can use moving forward. And email communication is crucial. You know, so in between coaching sessions, most of the time I'm almost holding the hands of my clients, because so often things happen throughout the day where they need help thinking something through. So basically what I help is I help people rewire their minds, basically, by helping them first to become aware of the way they think. And then once that we become aware of it, it's almost like, you know, we have to talk about it, we have to write about it, and then it becomes like an X-ray, as you were saying before. And then as we put everything out there, you know, in an email, and we can start dicing it up, and we can start saying, okay, when you said this, that was, were you concerned about what he thought about you? Is that why you answered that way? And if so, this is what I'd like you to consider saying next time. And so it really, Lisa, it is so complex and it's so unique. And it's so individualized, but it's great work, and I could not imagine myself doing anything else. I'm also a speaker. I've been asked to keynote in an event next year already, and I do in the area primarily. I work with I've worked with the Girl Scouts and a lot of women's groups and so on, and you know, that's what I'm all about. And I have my own blog talk radio show myself.
Yeah, right. I know. And everybody, I just want to point out again the ways that you can not, I put it in the chat room, but anybody that was in the chat room, Lisa can be found on healingselfesteem.com. At Lisa A. Romano at AOL.com. That's her email address. And Twitter is Lisa A. Romano 1. And that's your YouTube channel too, right?
Yeah.
Lisa A. Romano 1. All right. So everybody can find you there. And I just want to tell you, I found this really fascinating. I think you are so dead on right about the codependent aspect of ourselves. And I don't think that that it does get enough attention. You know, I don't think that we understand just how bad it is, and you know, and that we're, you know, that it's like you called it an epidemic. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place. I mean, it's not just.
It's in schools. You know, it's in school. It's everywhere. It's in schools. It's in our churches. It's in our politics. It's in our playgrounds. It's in our PTA rooms. It's everywhere. You know, we just have. When you love yourself, you don't need to compare yourself to anyone, and you accept people for who they are, and life just starts to unfold in a beautiful way.
Yeah. And
if you don't love yourself, you're looking for someone else to validate you, and that's just not going to work.
Right. Right. And and it makes so much sense. And I really do hope everybody goes and visits your website, gets in touch with you, goes on Amazon.com,
and buys one of your books. I have The Road Back to Me. I don't think I have the other one yet. The Codependent. I don't think I bought My Road Beyond the Codependent Divorce, but I did get the first one and loved it. I mean, it's really, really,
awesome.
Really
I
learned
love
a
your
lot
book
from
too.
It. Oh, thank you. Thank you very
I love
much.
Your book.
Thank you. I appreciate
the title.
Just Believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I simplify my life with Just Believe, although Justin Bieber and I seem to be going for that same hashtag. We're fighting over it. He's winning. He's winning the war. That's all right. I'm okay with that. I guess if I have to share a title, I can deal with that. Or a hashtag.
Right.
Just Believe. Anyway, so great having you on the show. I really appreciate it. And I hope you'll come on again. And also, I definitely want to talk about getting you on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, because I think you'd... We have a lot of fun. It's a much more down-to-earth fun show, but we have a ton of fun with it. But I think this
awesome.
Would be a great fit for that show too. So, I appreciate your being on, and we will talk soon.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for being on.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody, that is our show for the day. Thank you so much for listening to Just Believe Radio on the Right Stream Network. And please check out my website. My website is lisatarvis.com, LISATARVES.com. You'll find links about what I do, all about me, my Facebook pages, my Twitter account, my LinkedIn pages, all the different social media sites that you can follow me on, and you can pick up a copy of my book, Just Believe, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, all the typical sites where we were just talking about. You can find Lisa's books as well. And please also take a minute to check out the Right Stream Radio Network's website at rightstreamradio.com, and you can see all from that site all of the different shows we have, and there's also a page for each of the hosts of the shows. So it's great thing to do. Also, please you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at RightStream and at on Facebook at RightStream as well. Everybody have a fantastic week. We're still getting snow here. Well, not today, but we're buried in snow here in Pennsylvania, and apparently there's a little bit more coming tomorrow, but then we're going to have a warm-up, so it's going to be very exciting. Very excited about that. It's going to get warm later in the week and hopefully melt some of the snow. So everybody stay warm wherever you are, and have a fantastic week. And until next week, thank you very much for listening to Just Believe Radio, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.